You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to The Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you breaking news, stories and expert insight and analysis into all the major stories and the biggest clubs in football. Joined today on our Friday edition by the transfer guru that is Duncan Castles, but very, very excited to welcome a new guest, a very, very old friend, and the man who's been described as the Gary Lineker of Italian football broadcasting on Rai Uno, Mr. Aurelio Capaldi. Aurelio, hello. Benvenuto, fratello.
Grazie. Hello.
Now, we've got news for you today, guys, because lots of stories breaking around Europe, and there's a big reason why we have the doyen of Italian broadcasting joining us. And of course, that's because there's a lot of movement in terms of managers and players in Serie A. However, we must turn our attention, first of all, to one of the potential big, big stories of the summer, something that Duncan Castles broke in a story he wrote for The Record this week, and that is on Neymar and a potential move away from Paris Saint-Germain. Duncan, can you update us, please, on what's happening?
Yes. There are two major options for Neymar, and two options we've been aware of for a long time. He wants to go back to Spain. He's been agitating for that move back to Spain essentially since he joined Paris Saint-Germain. Real Madrid, we've seen on multiple occasions Florentino Perez trying to seduce him back to a club that he tried to sign him for before he ever moved to Barcelona and came to European football for the first time. And Barcelona, also of interest to Neymar to move back to. What I wrote earlier this week was that Barcelona have entered negotiations with Paris Saint-Germain to try and convince them to allow Neymar to come back to them. They're offering players in exchange. They're prepared to let Ousmane Dembele or Philippe Coutinho be part of that deal. Two players that they placed on the market anyway, separately. And interesting, two players that they bought as replacements for Neymar. Madrid have not made a move as yet, but I think Madrid become very viable in this because Florentino Perez has been so desperate to sign Neymar for so long. And seeing that Barcelona are now acting on this, he may be tempted to come into the transaction. What's important here is that Qatar has blocked a move for Neymar since he moved to the club. What I'm hearing from the Qatar end is that their stance on this has changed. They've looked at what's happened with Neymar over these 2 years. They've looked at the consistent problems they've had with him, the coaches have had with him. They have seen the development of Kylian Mbappe, overhauling Neymar as the most important player in their team and the biggest star. And they're now, I'm told, prepared to make the calculation that no one player is more important than the team. And should they get the right offer for him this summer, they're prepared to sell. So that's a fundamental change in stance, which opens this out for Barcelona, for Real Madrid, potentially even if one of the other superpowers in European football decided to get involved to actually do this in transaction this summer.
Aurelio, if you were the coach, or indeed the president of Barcelona or Real Madrid, would you think that Neymar was good value for money, given his form, his injury worries, and general demeanour over the last season or so?
I don't think so. I think that there were too many problems with Neymar. I mean, it costs a lot of money, but in the end,
he was not performing and he was not giving what people expected him to give. His talent is phenomenal, no doubts about it, but then too many problems with his injuries and also with his behavior off the field.
Duncan, what do you think is the likelihood of PSG being able to find a buyer for Neymar? Because we're talking about a 200 million euro transfer fee that was paid originally, and I think around 500,000 euros per week salary. Obviously, Neymar and his dad, who's his agent, are not going to be happy with anything less in terms of his personal terms. Do you think there's a realistic chance that Barcelona and Real Madrid are willing to take a chance on that?
I think it's very realistic, and that's what's coming out of Barcelona. As I said, both sides have been aware that Neymar's been driving this. Neymar and his father have been driving this through the season. They've been pushing Madrid and Barcelona and saying, we think we can get out of Paris this summer. Get in action. Make offers to Paris Saint-Germain. And I think if I'm on Madrid or Barcelona's side, I'd be using that in discussions with the player himself and saying, well, you want to get out of here, out of that club. You want to come back to Spain. Don't expect a pay rise. Maybe even have to compromise somewhat in your financial terms. The key element has always been getting Qatar to back off on their biggest statement signing. The world record transfer and have the getting over the pride of Qatar to say we are not going to allow this player to leave. And that seems to be the difference this summer, is that Qatar have tired of Neymar's antics. I've seen that he's not fundamental to them from a football perspective and are now prepared to consider a sale if the numbers are right or if the players offered to them are right. And remember, Dembele and Coutinho are both players that PSG tried to sign themselves. So they're good figures to offer to Qatar as part of a deal. And from a footballing perspective, it makes sense. Paris Saint-Germain don't need Neymar and Kylian Mbappe in the attack. They can have a more rounded squad by taking the money they spent on wages for Neymar and getting as much back of the transfer fee as possible and reinvesting it in other areas of the team where they badly need players, such as midfield, potentially a new goalkeeper. We know there's strong interest from them in David De Gea. And David De Gea is effectively on the market this summer. So from a football point of view, this is a sensible move for them. Take the money while it's there.
Interesting that PSG are finally coming around to the sort of realpolitik of football, in that all the big names don't necessarily make for big results. And so from there, though, Duncan, to an intriguing meeting between the chief executives of Benfica and Manchester City this week regarding possible transfer dealings in those two clubs.
Yes, there was a meeting yesterday in the Bulgari Hotel in London. Between Ferran Soriano, chief executive of Manchester City, Luis Felipe Vieira, the president of Benfica, and Jorge Mendes, who represents João Félix, Benfica's youngest, biggest star player that is available on the market, who all the top clubs in Europe are looking at. We told you in the transfer window some time ago that Manchester City see him as a potential replacement for Leroy Sané, who's in talks with Bayern Munich. I'm told the discussions were around João Félix yesterday. I was told also that a deal has not been concluded. It was more a discussion of term and how that transfer could be put in place. I think there's a possibility that other players were discussed here, because I know that Manchester City are interested in Florentino Luis, a young defensive midfielder who broke into the Benfica first team around the same time as João Félix, and is very highly regarded by Pep Guardiola, a very much a Guardiola-type player. and someone who you could see as a replacement for Fernandinho in the longer term, although perhaps a little early to be signing him this summer. But when you've got the chief executive of Manchester City, the president of Benfica, and the agent of one of the top players at Benfica in a room together, that tells you that there's very serious business going on between the clubs, and we can expect something to develop there through the summer.
As ever, the transfer window has taken you in the first few minutes of this podcast from the secret halls of conversation in London via Paris and now to Turin and Aurelio. We saw Maurizio Sarri win the first trophy of his 29-year career in Baku on Wednesday night when Chelsea lifted the Europa League title. Lots of links regarding him to Juventus. Can you please update us on what that is and what might be happening in the next few days?
Yeah, options are very open for him. Maurizio Sarri was the man who had won nothing before the Europa League final. But now things are different. Juventus showed interest, but in Italy there are still many people not convinced he's going to Juventus. But after the final, Maurizio Sarri said this victory is for Napoli fans. And so everybody was surprised because for a man who is about
to
go to Juventus,
Aurelio, it's odd for someone to you know dedicate a victory for Chelsea to Napoli fans.
Yes, and also it was surprising because there is a huge rivalry between Napoli and Juventus in Italy. So if you are about to be appointed as the next Juventus manager, that's surprising. But he also said this profession can bring you everywhere. So the option is open, but it must be discussed. It remains to be seen what happens between Sarri and Chelsea and how the dialogue goes. He knows that this is the most important time of his career. He was waiting for this, and now he wants to make the most of it. But in the end, everybody in Italy, lots of people in Italy think that the profile of Sarri is very different from the usual profile of a Juventus manager. Juventus manager usually is a man who wears jacket and tie, who speaks in a different way, who has different views. So everybody was a bit shocked. And also there are some people still talking about Guardiola in Italy, but that is a story that has not found confirmation, not for for this season.
Do you think that Sarri would be effectively a sort of proxy appointment, Aurelio, for maybe a year or until Guardiola might become available?
This is something that some people believe is possible because Massimiliano Allegri won a lot in Italy. I mean, he didn't manage to bring a Champions League in Turin, but in the end, you cannot say that he didn't win trophies. The reason why Juventus got rid of him is that they won Champions League, yes, but they also want a different style of play. In particular, Nedved was going to push for it. He wants to see a different style. And Maurizio Sarri has a different vision. So that is a possibility. But it would be surprising to appoint a manager only for 1 year or 2 years waiting for Guardiola to come.
What chance, Aurelio, of Maurizio Pochettino ending up at Juventus for next season?
I think that there are still some chances because Juventus like him and they also know that Pochettino is also a Juventus fan because when he was a boy, he brought up in Argentina with his Italian grandparents and his Italian grandparents were Juventus fans. So he always liked the club, and Juventus liked his profile. He's doing so well. So I think that if there is not a problem with the clause, they will try to sign him. They will try everything they can before giving it up.
So from the possibility of Juve's next coach to the fact that Antonio Conte has been appointed as Internazionale Milan next manager. Interesting, of course, because Conte was associated not just as a manager, but as a player with Juventus. And Duncan, it was you who told us that Jose Mourinho was not being considered for the Juve job because, quotes, he could not walk the streets of Turin. And yet Conte is allowed to make the opposite journey with seamlessness, apparently. So how does this work out? And indeed, what's Conte going to do at Inter in order to improve their status? Because clearly they've been a club who have not performed well in the last 3 years.
Well, I mean, I think Aurelio can go into the details of why Conte is acceptable at Inter. He's better placed than that as a Milan resident to talk about it than I am. But I guess from my perspective, it would be the relative positions of the club. I mean, Juventus have won title after title, are you know, trying to put that final piece in place to win the Champions League, whereas Inter are trying to get back to the top of Serie A, trying to dispossess Juventus. The pressures on them are much greater, and therefore you can take bigger risks with managers in a situation like that because the fans are more desperate. That would be my perspective on it. Obviously, there's a major factor here in that Beppe Marotta is the in charge of the technical decisions at Inter now. Having previously been at Juventus, when Inter's owners brought him to the club, they, I'm told, gave him assurances that he would be allowed to appoint the next manager. Antonio Conte is very much his man. There was the possibility of pursuing Jose Mourinho. I know Jose Mourinho was interested in that job, wanted to assess whether it would be a good place for him to go, because he knew that the resources required to take Juventus on, that the owners of the club were interested in the idea of bringing Mourinho back because a hugely populist decision with the fans. But ultimately, Marotta prevailed there and got to put his man in charge. And now Marotta and Conte will direct the transfer activity. And obviously that has relevance to England in that one of the players that Antonio Conte has tried to sign for many years, including at his time at Chelsea, is Romelu Lukaku. He shares an agent with Romelu Lukaku now. Lukaku has made it quite clear that he is open to leaving Manchester United. He's talked about wanting to play in Serie A. And Inter now have their Champions League qualification, so they have the money, additional money available from that to be able to get involved in dealing with Manchester United, who, again, I'm told are, it's not that they've placed the player on the market. It's not that they've told him he can leave, but they are open to selling Lukaku if the right money comes in. And Lukaku is open to that move because he knows he's not Solskjaer's first choice for the position, despite being their highest scorer at Manchester United in terms of non-penalty goals in both his seasons at the club. So he's performed well. I think he's actually improved significantly as a footballer since his time at Everton. He's a much more rounded player who involves teammates more, is not as selfish as he used to be, can create goals from the flanks. And it would be interesting to see how he does. But let's see what Aurelio's view is of that move and of Antonio Conte's arrival at Inter.
So really, what's your view then regarding the chances of Lukaku moving? We know he's on a very big deal at United, in excess of £250,000 per week. Will he have to accept a pay cut to come to Inter, or
Is it just the case that he wants to play football and Conte is the man to help him to improve his career?
Conte is pushing the move because he likes him a lot. And he has already got that he could get Dzeko from Roma. The deal is almost done. So he wants to play Dzeko, Lautaro, Martinez up front. And he would like also to get Lukaku.
That's a lot. That's a lot of firepower, really. How's he going to fit them all in?
That's a lot, but he wants physical strikers. He wants physical strikers, and he knows that Lukaku is not easy to get. So he's pushing a lot for Dzeko, for the deal to be completed. And yeah, Duncan is absolutely right. The reason, the main reason why Conte was appointed as Inter Milan manager is Marotta. Marotta wanted a man that he knows, because most of the Inter fans would have loved to see José Mourinho back again in Milan, and they were convinced it would bring Inter to success again. So Conte is backed by Marotta, and now he's trying to get a good market.
How else? What I don't understand, and that was a question I posed originally earlier, is why could Mourinho not be considered for Juventus when Conte has been welcomed at Inter? Is it because simply he's Italian and he managed the national team as an easier switch of manager, and Mourinho is someone who is seen as the enemy of Juventus?
As you know, in Italy, the rivalry between Juventus and Inter is very, very strong. And yes, Conte is seen as a Juventus man. And in the end, it will be results to decide. Marcello Lippi, for example, was appointed about 20 years ago as an Inter Milan manager after winning everything with Juventus. And things didn't go well. And when things don't go well, of course, fans are ready to remind you your past. So it will be results. Results will be very important for Conte, because some Inter fans still don't accept his past at Juve and is seen as a Juventus man. José Mourinho is a symbol for Inter fans. And he also has an excellent CV, and the memories are fantastic. That's why Inter fans would have loved to have seen him back. And same thing for Juventus fans. I mean, they see Mourinho as a symbol of Inter, and so it would have been difficult for him.
Well, I suspect that Sam Allardyce will be getting his CV in there somewhere in the next few months there, guys. Aurelio, I'm intrigued and also very, very enthusiastic to hear your views on Atalanta, who have qualified for the Champions League for the first time in their history. And we've already seen that a very successful Ajax squad in the Champions League this year is being dismantled by transfers to bigger clubs. Do you think there's interest in the Premier League for Atalanta players? Or do you think they can hold their squad together?
I think that there were discussions in the previous days between Atalanta chairman Percassi and Atalanta manager Gasperini, because Gasperini was supposed to go to Roma, and the deal was almost done. But in the end, Percassi persuaded him to stay. And the reason is that he promised him he would keep most of the squad. So Atalanta want to bring the best players in to play a good Champions League. It's the first time in history, as you said, and they want to make the most of it.
The weekend happening at the Wanda Metropolitano in Madrid, where Aurelio, you find yourself as Ryan, who's very esteemed correspondent on the ground there in Madrid, happening tomorrow night, between a couple of rivals called Liverpool and Tottenham Hotspur. Duncan, we have not really addressed this so far this week in the podcast, However, I am kind of curious to find out what you think with regards to what the build-up's been and also team selection potential, as well as, you know, how's this one going to work out? Because, as we know, games between two English clubs in Champions League final, if we go back to 2008 in Moscow with Manchester United and Chelsea, it was a bit of a boring game. Both teams not wanting to lose, and of course it ended up in a penalty shootout. So what's your view on how things have gone so far this week? Obviously a very different way of going about it, in terms of the fact that Tottenham have been in Madrid for 3 days already. Liverpool don't even fly out until Friday afternoon. So how are things in terms of preparation, in terms of the way that the teams are setting themselves out? Do you reckon is what's going to happen?
Yeah, Ian, it's it is a very strange Champions League final in the sense that the teams have had almost 3 weeks to wait for this game because the Premier League ended so much earlier than some of the other continental leagues. That could be a good thing, and it allows you to rehabilitate your players. And obviously Tottenham have a decision to make over whether they start or play Harry Kane in the final. Whether the Harry Kane team decides to use Harry Kane for the biggest match in their history. I guess it gives Tottenham, I think something that's kind of gone under the radar with Tottenham is they've been on a horrendous run of form. And the last 8 games, they've won just twice. One of those, that extremely fortunate sort of Route 1 football victory over Ajax in the Champions League semi-final, and the other one, a very marginal win over Brighton, who were fighting for their Premier League survival. They last won away from home in March. So they certainly needed to reset.
Everyone wants to know, is Harry Kane going to be fit? Is he going to score? So let's face it, they don't have a practice match. They may well have played for Liverpool up front.
I think you're right. I think the all English final is a strange scenario. I mean, I was at the game in Moscow, the last all English final between Chelsea and Manchester United. I think when you see English teams play each other in the Champions League in knockout matches, you get a completely different dynamic because you have the away goals rule in play, and it's always an interesting game. It always has a different feel from a standard Premier League game because of that. This one, I'm not so sure. I think it might be more like a standard Premier League game in the sense of the way the teams approach it. There's no away goals there. The two teams, Liverpool won both matches this season, 2-1, but were extremely, extremely fortunate in the second of those games at Anfield when they won with a you know, bizarre goalkeeping error, own goal from Toby Alderweireld in the last minute in a match that they could easily have been 2-1 down at that stage. So the tactical options from Pochettino will be interesting. He's a guy who changes his setup regularly, changes formation, changes the way he presses opponents, doesn't always make the right decisions, but is quite often capable of changing them in game and getting a different effect during the game. Klopp, I think we pretty much know. I'd be very surprised if Klopp puts anything unusual into his setup. It'll be trust the way they played for the season, trust the players he's preferred for the season, and expect to win. I mean, he's talked about, he said, I've never been part of a final with a better team than this. So he's kind of put the pressure on himself as a man who's lost 6 consecutive finals. To deliver this time. And I think if he doesn't deliver this time, it will be a major black mark for him, because it's clear that he has the better players and a team in better form going into this game.
Aurelio, it's fair to say that you're something of a Champions League final celebrity, having attended, I think, probably around 22 Champions League finals in consecutive years, even more than Duncan and I. You're on the ground in Madrid today.
What's the feeling there in Madrid? Is it different to be involved in an all-English final from what we usually expect, which is, of course, two teams from competing nations in the Champions League final?
Yeah, first of all, it's very surprising here in Madrid that Madrid teams are not involved, you know, because in 2014 and in 2016, they were both in the final. Now we are in Madrid, and Real Madrid and Atletico are out. It's surprising. But anyway, I think that this time for Klopp, it will be super important because, as Duncan said, now it's time to deliver. And it's an amazing chance for him. Liverpool, I think that Liverpool has something more. And also European experience is going to play a part now. So it's very open. I think it will be a very, very interesting game with lots of adrenaline. And this time, I think Jurgen Klopp has a great chance.
Is there a chance, Aurelio, that Tottenham will try to bully Liverpool in the way that Real Madrid did in last year's final in Kiev?
I think that Tottenham is going to play a tactical game. I think Pochettino will have a clear tactical plan, and he will try to reduce the Liverpool options. I think that Liverpool are not going to speculate. They're going to play their football. And I think it's very open, but Liverpool, as I said, has something more.
Aurelio, what's the view in Italy of an all-English final? Because there's been a kind of celebration in England of the fact that all four finalists of the European, the two European Cups, were English clubs this season, and a kind of claim that this is a start of a new era of dominance of English clubs in European football. How's that perceived from Serie A and from Italy?
The analysis about this were all about money. I mean, everybody was talking about the fantastic money that Premier League produces, and so Premier League often gets the best players, and these are the results.
And do you see it continue? Do people see it continuing in Italy? Do they see it as is the expectation that this will be English finalist after English finalist going forward, or do they see it as an aberrant year?
No, it will be maybe not so dominant every season, but it is going to be something which is going to happen often. I mean, maybe not every year. Two English teams in the Champions League Cup final or in the Europe Cup final, but English teams are going to perform at the highest level.
Duncan, what do Liverpool need to do to break through this cycle of defeat in this particular game, a game which they have been involved in but not won since 2005? What is it they need to do? Is it mental or is it purely tactical? What does Klopp need to do with his team to get them to win this final?
I think there's a mental side for Jurgen Klopp here. I think when you have a track record of six consecutive defeats in finals, you're going to question yourself to a certain extent. It's a good piece by our friend Rafi Honigstein about Jurgen Klopp's six final defeats this week, and he kind of analysed them to break them down and as to whether they deserve to lose those games. And essentially, you come to the conclusion there was only one game where he was properly unlucky in, which was a German Cup final against Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich, just after I think Madrid had destroyed Bayern in a Champions League semi-final, and Bayern were a mess, and Dortmund actually scored a goal that went over the line but was disallowed, so it was pre-goal line technology in Germany. So that game he clearly should have won. But if the rest of them essentially shouldn't have, and quite often came down to mistakes he made. I think, yes, there will also be a mental element for the players. They, you know, that they took the Premier League to the wire, and I think Klopp handled them very cleverly there, in the sense that once they had handed over their big advantage in the Premier League, and Manchester City took the advantage in terms of potential points that they could grab if they won all their games. Klopp said to them, look, it doesn't matter if you don't win this title. I just want you to do the maximum you can. So if you win every match that you can, then you'll have done everything that's in your ability. And if they happen to get more points, then they win the title. I think that was very clever management and getting the maximum from his team, but it was from a chasing, a pursuer's position. And when you're at a club which has such a long history of failing, you know, they're going into their third decade without an English title, and they barely won a cup in the last 15 years. When you're at a club with that weight of expectation on them, and then suddenly you're in a final where you are the favourites, where you've clearly been the better of the two teams going into that match, I think that does change the dynamic. And it will be interesting to see how these Liverpool players respond to it, and whether Klopp can get the maximum from them in the final. But and if he doesn't, as I say, you ask big questions about him. Is he really a winner for all the good work he's done at the club? If he can't get a team which is so much better than his opponents over the line in a game like this, does he have that final element that the very best managers have to have?
Well, as is befitting of the most important game in European club football, we have experienced, certainly last year, the fact that one player has had more influence on the outcome than any other. For that reason, man of the match was Gareth Bale in the final of Real Madrid-Liverpool last year. Many people will say that Loris Karius also had a very important influence on that game, although not necessarily positive. So our legendary quickfire round for this Friday's edition of the podcast, I'm going to ask Duncan and Aurelio which player they believe is the potential match winner on either side. But I'm going to make it harder than just that, because I'm going to give them each a team. So Duncan, I'm going to ask you to go first and tell me who is Tottenham's potential match winner for Saturday night's game in Madrid.
I was thinking Liverpool players going into this, and I was going to pick Fabinho as the most important Liverpool player, because I think when he operates at his best in midfield, he adds another dimension to Liverpool. For Tottenham, the nature of this game, the strength of Liverpool's attack. I think they need a really good game from Hugo Lloris. I think Lloris has to be at, you know, his World Cup winning level to stop the Liverpool attack, because they will have chances and they will put shots in and goal. So I think Lloris is going to be important here.
Aurelio, I'm handing you the easier task, apparently, as Duncan has just made out. For Liverpool, who is the potential match winner or most influential player?
I say two, Alisson and Salah. The reason is that Alisson will have to make the most of it, because he already showed what a fantastic and amazing player he is. He really makes the difference most of the times. And for Salah, it is the time to show that he's the man to make the difference also in the very big nights.
So I'm not going to let you, either of you, go without giving us a prediction for the game itself. That would be silly if I did. So, Duncan, I'm going to go to you first. What is the score going to be? How is this game going to work out?
I will give you a prediction of 2-1 to Liverpool in extra time.
Oh, very precise. Well, I'm not sure what the odds are on that, but I'm sure John McFarlane will tell us. Aurelio, and you?
I would say 2-0 for Liverpool.
So, two Liverpool wins from our experts today on the Transfer Window podcast. It's time to close this particular edition. However, please continue the debate with us, as we love to hear your input on what we've been talking about. Aurelio is at Aurelio Capaldi on Twitter. Duncan, as you all know, is at Duncan Castles. We have our own Transfer Window account, which is at Transfer Podcast. And I am at Garbo SJ. If you like what you've been hearing, and we know thousands of you do, please return the favour and pop onto iTunes, give us a 5-star review so that we can expand the community, expand the debate, and get more of you involved, as always. It's a very, very big night in Madrid on Saturday for English football, as we have been talking about. So we will return to you on Monday with the insight and analysis on the game, as well as, of course, more breaking news on the transfer window discussions. All we've got to say for now is thank you for listening, and we will speak to you on Monday.